Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yeah, we did, baby. We started to burn many things we found. That's the divine Dar Williams singing with the magnificent Pete Seeger and David Burns, the Solartopia song. We are doing something today on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. It's never been done before. We are on the Golden Rule, the ship, the famous ship that sailed into stop nuclear testing in the 1950s that was pulled out of Humboldt Bay and refurbished by Chuck and company. And we are now sailing up the Willamette River, or is it the Columbia, Helen?
We're on the Willamette.
What? We're on the Willamette. Okay, I am not a native, obviously. We are being rained on. So, but we are on this incredibly beautiful sloop ship and sailing up through the city of Portland to confront a number of warships that are coming in from the U.S. and Canadian navies. Got some interference there. Okay, we're good. Now, we expect to go in and out. Crew in New York is going to be very gracious with us and give us a lot of slack. We are now being approached by a police boat, amazingly enough. How you doing, guys? You're on the radio. Smile. Smile on the radio. Looking good. So we're being talked to by the sheriff here. The Golden Rule that we are on in Portland here sailed in 1958 to stop nuclear testing. And I'm getting some feedback on here, but I'll keep talking. Crew in New York, talk to me if there's a problem that I can help. And so a couple of cops now have come up on the boat. They're flashing. I think they're going to give a ticket. I don't think we're speeding. They want to stop us, obviously, from confronting the nuclear navy or whatever the navy is that's coming in here. So the Golden Rule. Those of you listening in, if you want to Google while you're watching or listening, the Golden Rule, and find out what it's all about, we'll be happy to talk to you about it. So the police are talking to us now. Mimi German is with us. Mimi is an anti-nuclear activist here, a great activist in Portland. Mimi, tell us what's going on here.
Well, what's happening right now is sort of similar to what happened when we were trying to stop the Seneca just months back on this very same river, just a couple of bridges up from here. And the cops are over here talking to their crew members, talking to the captain, all in an attempt to decide if we are legal enough to be here. And who knows what they're going to tell us, but, you know, we're here to stop these warships. I'm not just going to stop the warships from coming in, but no, we're not going to stop the warships from coming in, but we are going to have a presence here that says who we are, you know? We're about peace.
Well, tell us who we are, Mimi. Tell us about the Golden Rule and what our whole thing is. Okay, so Helen, can you talk to us now?
Yeah, I think I can. Okay. I got the gate open so they can come aboard.
Introduce yourself. Oh, the police are coming aboard.
Yeah, they're going to board and inspect and make sure we don't have any nuclear weapons on board.
Okay, so tell us what we're all about, Helen. And introduce yourself, if you would, and tell us what we're doing here.
So I'm Helen Deckard. I'm the project manager for the Veterans for Peace Golden Rule Project and Peace Boat. And we are here right now to add a message of peace with our sails and our signs. We're expecting to be joined by several other boats and kayakers. Our sails are bright red. One of them has a white giant 6-foot in diameter peace symbol on it. Our other sail has a giant Veterans for Peace logo on it. We're a national project of Veterans for Peace. And we're expecting the Navy warships for Fleet Week to be coming in about an hour.
And what are they here for, Helen? Why is the warships coming in? We're not at war with Canada yet, are we?
Gosh, not that I know of. This is just an annual event where they glorify war and get people used to seeing our war machines by bringing them to the Portland waterfront in the downtown area so people can admire our big old firepower here. And we did the same action in San Francisco last year, and we'll be doing it again in August in Seattle.
And so one of the officers has just gone downstairs, and he's come back up. Are these where are these guys from? Are they feds or are they the local?
This is the county sheriff's office.
Okay, so we're looking at a little harbor cruiser here. Two guys in police uniforms. They don't appear to be carrying guns, and they seem to be pretty friendly, actually. Trying to see, and there's a kayaker. The first of the kayakers coming up in a gold kayak with a a Vietnamese peasant hat and a lime green rain garb. It is drizzling a little bit here, although it's wetting up. Some kind of conversation going on with the sheriff. He is carrying a gun. Well, what does he need a gun for? So what do you think, Helen? What's going to happen now?
Well, we're going to talk to this woman in the kayak. I very much doubt that they can board her kayak and inspect it.
Actually, when we were protesting the Seneca, they came up with a bunch of non-laws that don't exist, telling us that we had to leave or we would be arrested for being in federal waters. And these things are not on the books. So we knew that, and we stayed in the water, and we all know what happened with the Seneca. You know, we ended up gaining good ground for us and bad ground for the oil companies. This was on this river just about four bridges up just months ago.
Oh, when you guys were transiting from Hayden Island to downtown Portland.
No. This was when the Seneca ship was coming in to the icebreaker ship that was going up way up north. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So what happened then was there were about, 10 different cop boats that came and surrounded all the kayakivists to tell us, you can't be here. And this is sort of reminiscent.
Got to have a quick update here. Quick update. And then, Mimi, you're going to have, or Helen, you'll have to tell us what the Seneca is.
I have no idea. And I think that we should stay in the present.
You want me to? Did you hear what was going on?
No, yeah. Let's hear it. Tell us what.
Did you hear what we're doing?
Tell us.
Okay, we're just boarded and inspected. We're clear to go through.
Here. Wait. You got to talk right in here. Identify yourself. Go ahead.
Yes, Jeff Burke, temporary captain of the Golden Rule. We're clear to go through downriver as far as we want to go.
We're clear to go through downriver. And as far as we can go, yeah.
And we need to stay on the north side of the shore as much as we can.
North side of the shore as much as we can, okay.
All right,
we're going to go turn around and come back. But there's another side of the secure zone.
Okay.
If we go through that side, then we'll have to be inspected again.
All right.
Okay.
They can come aboard and inspect us as much as they want.
Right. Okay.
If we leave his side, then when we come back, he'll have to inspect us again. But
okay.
We have been inspected and we have passed inspection. The two sheriffs have got on their little boat. Thank you.
Very well.
For that update. we are now clear to go. We're going under. What's the name of this bridge?
This is the Morrison Bridge.
We're going under the Morrison Bridge here that spans the Willamette River in Portland, Oregon, and we're heading up towards the warships. The sheriff has gone away from us.
This is the Hawthorne Bridge. The next one's
the
Morrison Bridge.
And warships.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Helen.
Okay, so on our port side, we've got two Canadian warships. They came in yesterday about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And my understanding is that there's some Coast Guard ships out here as well. Oh, there they are, right under the bridge. It's a really big and a really small Coast Guard ship, all decorated up with a whole bunch of different flags of different countries, and just, looking proud as hell to be part of the military.
And these Canadian ships, what kind of ships are they?
No, I don't know one Navy ship from another, but we've got somebody on board that does. Looks like we're putting up our mizzen sail. That's the one in the back that's got the giant peace symbol on it.
Fantastic. So we're on the golden rule here, and the peace symbol is going up. Mimi, describe for us what the peace symbol looks like.
It's a big sail. It's a beautiful sail. Peace symbol is huge, visible from anywhere across the river on either side of Portland. And, boy, I can't even express my gratitude for this boat being here, you know, for the golden rule gracing us with its presence of peace and justice for all of us here. Having lived in Portland for 18 years and seeing these warships come in here as if invited by all of us, has been a disgrace. And again, this is just really an occasion right now to have Helen here and the crew here and everybody reminding us that what we need in this world right now is peace. And we need these warships to never show face here again in the future. I'm hoping that that's what happens after today.
So Helen, will you tell us the story of the golden rule, as only you can.
And so when the two bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki were dropped, the original captain of the golden rule was a career Navy man. And because of the dropping of the bombs, he resigned his commission a month before he could have received full retirement. Next thing that happened was people were being exposed to strontium 90, particularly since it acts like calcium in your body. Our baby's teeth and bones were absorbing strontium 90. Strontium 90 was coming from the atmospheric nuclear test in the Marshall Islands and other places during the early 1950s. In 1958, after having written to Congress, written to the president, putting letters in the editors and to Congress and the president, doing everything that they could think of, doing protests, everything, to try to stop this atmospheric nuclear testing and this radiation going into our environment, this group of four Quakers decided that they had no choice but to take nonviolent direct action very, very publicly and go into the Marshall Islands and into that testing zone and try to put their lives at risk in order to stop this testing. So that's what happened. They sailed from San Pedro near Los Angeles, made it as far as Honolulu. They took on new supplies, and they headed out from Honolulu, and they were boarded by the Coast Guard and taken back to Honolulu twice. The crew was arrested. They spent 60 days in jail. One of the crew members got tuberculosis and suffered from that for the rest of his life from that Honolulu jail. So then what happened was the crew of the Phoenix of Hiroshima, Dr. Earl Reynolds had just spent 3 years studying the effects of radiation on children in Hiroshima, and he and his family had just gotten almost done with an around-the-world journey in their 50-foot sailboat, the Phoenix of Hiroshima, and they took the baton from Captain Bigelow and the rest of the Golden Rule crew, and they did sail into the nuclear test zone, and this was 1958, partly as a result of these actions. In 1963, President Kennedy signed the Limited Nuclear Test Ban Treaty that outlawed atmospheric, underwater, and in-space nuclear explosions. So it was partly successful in its mission.
Okay, Helen, so then what happened to the Golden Rule itself, the boat?
So after Honolulu, the boat was sold into private hands, and nobody knew anything about her until 2010. She showed up at the bottom of Humboldt Bay. She had just sighted because she had dashed with a spear in a gale. And after that, the next day or so, they brought her up out of the bay. Golden Rule had played an important part in the Cold War And it ended up in the hands of the local Veterans for Peace chapter and local Quakers and dozens of volunteers from 2010 through 2015 restored this old boat. And now we're sailing again for a nuclear-free world and a peaceful, sustainable future.
It's an astonishing story. I know on the radio you can't see how beautiful this boat is, but it has such a history. And so much love and commitment has gone into restoring this boat. And Helen, you've been a big part of it. And here it is in Portland. It's got a crew and a whole. Can you tell us, Helen, a bit about the itinerary of the boat and what you're going to be doing with it?
So this year we're going up the Columbia River as far as Hood River. And then we're going to go back out around the Olympic Peninsula and do action in Port Townsend against the Indian Island Munitions Depot, where most of the weapons that are going to the Middle East wars are sent from. And then we're going around we'll be in four wooden boat shows this year, all over Puget Sound and two in Canada, one in Victoria, one in Vancouver. We'll be doing educational events. We're going to try to reach beyond the choir to teach people about the dangers of radiation and try to influence people regarding nuclear weapons and nuclear power.
And what is the website and the phone number and all the address where people can reach you to find out more about this?
Our website is VFP, as in Veterans for Peace, VFP Golden Rule Project. .org, and our email address is vfpgoldenruleproject@gmail.com. And if you want to phone me and find me somewhere on the boat or being shore support, my phone number is 206-992-6364.
Fantastic. So you're going to stay with us for the rest of the hour, if you would. We're going to talk a little more about nuclear power and weapons. I want to set the scene. We've just sailed under one bridge whose name I don't know. What bridge is that?
The Burnside.
That's the Burnside Bridge. And what's the one we're looking at up ahead?
Broadway.
The Broadway Bridge. And the water, I guess the river is about a quarter mile wide at this point. It's gray and chilly and rainy here in Portland. There are fire boats and police boats all over the place. And we are headed up to the actual warship. Mimi Gurman, you're with us from the movement to shut down the Columbia Generating Station nuclear plant and to deal with other nuclear issues. Can you talk to us, please, about what the Willamette River means here and what our presence on this river means?
Well, what the presence of this ship really means on this river is that we have needed to make a statement against nuclear war, nuclear weapons, and the making of the bombs that hurt so many people in Japan years ago, and the making of bombs that hurt people all over the world. You know, when a nuclear bomb goes off, it affects everybody. And when nuclear power plants are built and they leak, that affects everybody. And we have the largest nuclear waste dump up the Columbia River. Almost 200 miles, 177 miles of river from here on the Columbia, just dumping millions and millions of gallons of waste into the ground, into the groundwater, and into the Columbia River. We also have a nuclear power plant up there called the Columbia Generating Station in the same spot. And that plant is leaking. And again, if we have a major accident up there, more major than what we've had in the past with Fukushima and things like that, we're in big trouble here. Our river is going to be uninhabitable. The river people are going to be, you know, no longer river people. And that's all of us in the Pacific Northwest along the Columbia River. So it's really important to shut this plant down. And being in Portland on this ship on the Golden Rule, really protesting war and protesting what it stands for and talking about peace in such a big way. When you see these sails of peace coming down the river, this is a statement for the nuclear industry, as far as I'm concerned, to stop the insanity and stop this war, stop the war games, and look for peace to everybody along this river and along the entire planet. It's time. And, man, I am, again,
pretty blown away that we're here doing this on this river. I see that the steel bridge is lifted, and for kayak activists in Portland or those coming down from Seattle, we are coming under the Broadway Bridge right now and approaching the steel bridge. So if you got kayaks, come on down. You'll find us.
Okay, so we're going under the bridge. Mimi Gurman, what is the major thrust of the campaign to shut the Columbia Generating Station? Tell us about the petition and also about the resolution from the Seattle City Council, if you would.
Yeah, so for folks in the Pacific Northwest or anyone who has access to people in Washington State, we have an initiative called I-855, which you can find and download on radcast.org. That's RADCAST.org.
Are you not able to hear?
And you can take those initiatives into Washington and get signatures on them so that the people of Washington can vote to decide if they want this nuclear power plant to stay online or not. And I am positive, I'm 100% positive that the people of Washington, once they figure out and find out and learn about the nuclear power plant, they're going to want to shut down. And the initiative is the best way right now to do that.
So you're looking for a statewide vote, which I read this morning, whereby, oh, my God, there's a sorry, I've never seen a destroyer from directly looking at a bow before. We're going up to the Willamette River, and I just look up this big gray monster of a ship. Do we know what kind of ship that is? The one that's designed to kill people? I'll set the tone. We're next to a big granary here, coming up the Willamette River on our right. Giant big silos full of grain on the left side are condos from the yuckified Portland. There's a patrol boat, a Coast Guard patrol boat off to our left. I guess that would be the fourth side. And we're looking at a destroyer from the U.S. Navy. I don't think they'll open fire at least not until the show is over. There's a couple of tugboats around, and there's a drawbridge that we are headed to. This is pretty
You know, Army, the from experiencing what did go down on the Seneca this year on this very river, I can tell you that the cops positioning themselves on the river cops, are definitely positioning themselves so that the Golden Rule does not move over towards the blockade of this warship that's coming through. And we have seen this happen. And for any cops listening, that's not the plan. We're just going up the river. We're not blockading. We are here as a presence.
Yes, it's not our intent today to get arrested here with the Golden Rule. It is our intent to move ahead, just to go up the river and say hi to the boat. Now, the boat has a number 4 on the side, and a bunch of sailors in white are on the bridge. Mimi, can you describe the scene?
Yeah, again, this is something that, fortunately for all of us, we have really a hardcore group of protesters in Portland who work for peace and environmental justice. And because of the events from the past, there are police up on the steel bridge making sure that what happened at the Seneca does not happen again. And there are really, folks, there are cops surrounding the Golden Rule, allowing us to move forward, but blocking us from coming in front of this warship. The sailors that are on the Navy ship coming in, wow, they are standing, is that at attention?
I don't know.
They're
wet.
Yeah,
they're getting wet. It's in the rain.
Yeah, there's another police boat coming in now to block us from blocking the ship. And we're getting some waves from the Navy ship. All right.
All right. We're waving back. The ship is number 4. I would guess from the days when it's called the Champion. Is that right? Did I read that right? Champion. It's got what look like torpedoes on the back. It's not having any guns on either front or back that we can see. But this is definitely not a fishing boat. Hi, guys. They're waving at us for about, 50 yards. They're going to the west. We're going to the east, I think. And we're about to head under another bridge. But the occasion is that the Navy brings these ships into Portland Harbor to show the colors and show the public what a warship looks like. I guess that's the deal. So we're here
ship look like? And one of our slogans on the side of the boat here is to stop glorifying war, which is a really important thing to explain. So, wow, I have never done anything like this. And we'll have to put pictures up on the website to show what it's like to go up a ship in the upper Willamette River. In the middle of the city of Portland, it's a warship here. Mimi, you keep talking about the Seneca. Can you tell us what the Seneca was and what happened?
Yeah, the Seneca was a BP icebreaker, and it had a hole in it, and it came down here to get fixed because the last time it had an issue, it went to Seattle, and that didn't go too well either. So it came down here thinking that it could just get fixed and get out of here. The window for the fix was very, very short for it to get all the way back up there and, you know, do its job to help BP out and kill the rest of us. And we blockaded it. The kayaktivists came in by the hundreds on the river, and Greenpeace came down off of St. John's Bridge and hung down there. I think everybody has seen them. It was an incredible display of protest and protesting environmental degradation and death to the planet. It's time to respect the planet that we all live on. And that's what we're doing today with the Golden Rule out here, reminding people that this is about peace. And so for go ahead, Harp.
Mimi Gurman, you told me earlier, we're on the Golden Rule and going up the Willamette River with Helen and Mimi and a great crew on this historic ship. Mimi, you told me earlier this morning about your experience in Seneca. Tell us about that. Tell us what happened, your personal experience.
Yeah, Greenpeace came down off the bridge during the middle of the night, and there were some kayaktivists doing the planning for that in the river. And then I woke up just down to helicopters and came down to the river, saw what was going on, got in a kayak. At that point, a lot of the protesters were taking a break because they'd been at it for hours already all night long preparing to blockade the Seneca. So around 6:30 in the morning when I got in the river, there was time when there were no cops around. And it was me, a kayak, and a couple other kayakers just waiting. And the Seneca, it's a huge boat. And it was coming down the river, thinking about coming through. And I was on my phone talking to somebody who could hear radio action and what was going on with what the Seneca was going to do. And so I was getting told, you know, stay put. It's not knowing what it wants to do. It might want to come through. Anyway, it decided to turn around. And having this time early in the morning, these beautiful birds flying overhead, a couple of kayaktivists in the water, just staring right in front from the perspective of the water, in the face of this icebreaker, of this earth destructor, watching it turn around and go back in, was really amazing, because we knew at that point that we had gained a lot of time where we were closing that window down for them and causing them a lot of money. And it was a moment I realized as an activist where I actually had time to be in the space that I was at in my protest, to feel, to see, to witness what it was I was doing rather than being chased by cops for a moment. It was a beautiful experience, I think, for so many of us that entire day fighting the Seneca.
Now, the Seneca was involved in the drilling in the Arctic.
They sure were. Without the Seneca, they couldn't drill.
Right. And so what happened was, as I recall, there was a whole big confrontation. They took the equipment here in Portland and in Seattle. They took the equipment up to the Arctic, and they poked a hole in it, right? And they had to come down and fix it.
Yeah.
And they lost all this time.
And what happened was, the Seneca was the only ship that had the cap on it for a potential oil well that they were drilling down there. So if there was a spill like we saw, you know, in, what was that, a couple years back, there would be no cap for it. So they couldn't do anything without the Seneca. So I'm being told to hold on because we're getting waked out here, okay?
Yeah, we got a wake. A boat came back, had something. Put up a wake, so we're rolling up and down.
All right.
Who gets seasick, you may want to get some Dramamine. USS Russell, what kind of ship is that?
The Arleigh Burke class destroyer.
A Burke class Destroyer. Arleigh. Early Bird.
Arleigh.
Are
you
waking up intentionally?
Oh, so he must have been the guy responsible for the commander of the... Oh, all right. So that ship is named after a commander of the Royal Pacific Fleet. So... We have two berths here. One on our ship and one on our ship. And there's one on our ship is much better looking, I think. So the Fenica... went up and to, we're going up again, Willamette River here. Thank you for that. The Fenica was essential to the drilling in the Arctic. They sent huge hoopla. They sent this fleet up to destroy the Arctic to get the oil. They poke the hole, they come back, and Mimi German and a bunch of other Tommy subversives get in front of their kayaks. Mimi, were you arrested that day? What happened?
No, I wasn't arrested that day. I've been trying hard to not be arrested right now because I have a really old dog who depends on me. So it's hard for me because getting arrested is part of what I do in general. So it was actually an effort to not get arrested that day because it was a crazy moment. By the way, we're approaching the Fremont Bridge right now, and on the other side of the Fremont Bridge, just down away to the right, Harvey, is where the Pinnacle was docked. And then you'll see, once we get through here, you'll see the St. John's Bridge. And that's where all the action that we're talking about with the Fenica took place. And this is the waterway where all these warships come in every year. And people are told on our news channels here and our newspapers here to celebrate the warships, to bring your kids down to the docks so that they can get tours on the warships and learn about these ships. And what do you think they learn about these ships?
No.
Well, they sort of learn that these ships take part in killing a lot of people. They don't tell us that these ships take part in bombing people. They don't take charge. They don't tell us that, you know, ships like these carry nuclear weapons on them. They don't tell the kids that, you know. And this is again, man.
But we do.
We do. And this really for this area, for the Pacific Northwest, man, these warships are so unwelcome here by many of us. And those of us who do understand that, we really need to get together, just like the Golden Rule is doing right now. And we need to prevent this in years to come in a really big way. And I think we need to get, by the way, folks, there are kayakers out here on the water. I'm just letting people know because it'd be great to see more of you come on down.
And this being Portland, it's cold, it's wet, but coming out to protest against war really warms you up. I want to fill you in a little bit since we got a moment here. In the last week, four commercial atomic reactors in the United States have been announced that they're going to shut. Three in Illinois, one in Flint, two in Quad Cities, and one in 3 Mile Island Unit 1 in Pennsylvania. It's a very, very big deal. We also have news from Diablo Canyon in California. There will be hearings in front of the California Land Commission on June 28th, where the Land Commission will be looking at issues surrounding an extension of leases that are needed to continue operation at Diablo Canyon. These are state leases. A decision will be made in California at the Land Commission whether or not electric fires to do environmental impact of these statements, which they will not require to do an original issue. So this is a big deal. Gather this is the guy they phone are the three commissioners on the land commission. They will be having a hearing on the 28th, and then they're going to rule on whether or not the dual of the leases has two reactors extend outside of San Luis Obispo. At Diablo Canyon, required to undergo environmental impact review statement as required by CEQA, the California Environmental Quality Act. This is a very big deal. These reactors were built in the past, and the PG&E is arguing that they are grandfathered, that they don't have to meet these environmental requirements. We don't think that's going to fly. We have had indications from Gavin Newsom, one of the commissioners who will be running for governor in 2018 in California, that he is leaning towards requiring PG&E to do these environmental impact reviews. There are many people who believe that rather than do the reviews, PG&E agree to
shut the reactors. So, Helen, do you have a phone? Okay,
Helen, why did you put me on the air?
Yes. Anyway, it's okay. Just we're on this float here, and everybody's talking, so it's good. So there we go. I think it's a little fire. Thank you. You still on? Well, tell me, why don't you describe from your side of the boat here what we're doing at this point?
Oh, we're just going further upriver thinking that we're going to see some more of these warships. And then pretty soon we're going to turn around because we've got people on shore interested in seeing us next to the warship. So pretty soon we'll turn around and get a good look at people from that perspective.
Okay, very good. Good. Thank you, Helen. Stick with it. Okay. So the Environmental Quality Board, Land Commission in California, if they make this decision to require these environmental impact reviews, surveys, which are very expensive to do from PG&E, and we know that they're never going to pass muster. There are earthquake issues involved. There are tidal issues involved. Uh-oh. Is that me? Yeah, it was. So I got to call that back. Mimi, why don't you go ahead and talk to that?
Okay. I'm not sure if we're still on, but
yes, we
just went under the Fremont Bridge, and we're still heading towards the St. John's Bridge. We're passing a couple of tents alongside the river where our homeless are relegated to live here. Instead of providing housing in Portland, we allow warships to come through. And that's really a drag, man. It's beyond a drag. It's just not right. And, yeah, I'm passing one, two, three, four, five. Five tents alongside the river here. And people living out in their tent in the rain. Warships come in. We allow these warships to come in. We provide money for these police ships to be out here for the Coast Guard. There's a lot of money involved in war, and instead of helping our people here in Portland who are in need of food, of housing, of all kinds of needs, we give that money to war, and we give it to these warships, and we give it to the Rose Festival, and we give it to Fleet Week. And, again, this needs to stop. This is nuclear madness, and instead of Portland getting on board, when I went to them a couple years ago to request from our city council that, to request from the city council that they pass a resolution to support Washington's decision to shut down CGS, to say that you should create a decision to shut down CGS, the Portland City Council individually wrote me back and said, hell no, we're not touching that. We don't get to vote on what happens at the Columbia Generating Station. We don't get to say what happens at Hanford. And, you know, folks, that's just wrong, man. It's actually wrong. We do get a say. And we get a big say. First of all, because we're humans living here. And it's our job as humans, our moral imperative, to make sure that we protect our Earth and all living beings on it, including the plants and the animals, including future generations, including the cellular structure of all living things for the future in whatever that future brings. And instead, again, we vote for nukes. We vote for this waste of money at Hanford. We do all kinds of things like this, and it's time to stop. And I'm going to pass this on to Harvey.
Okay, we are very gingerly passing this phone on the boat. My phone has come through the rain, so hopefully Mimi's won't, and Helen's won't. I was in the middle of talking about the Diablo Canyon situation, and this is something for everybody to be aware of in California. The June 28th hearing in Sacramento. People should go. Starts at 10 in the morning. And also go to the website of the California Lands Commission. Write to Gavin Newsom, Betty Yee, and Mr. Cohen, whose name I can't remember. Sorry about that. And tell them that the Pacific Gas and Electric needs to be required to do the environmental review studies as required by the CEQA, California Environmental Quality Act. And we think we're going to win this. And if we do win this, we may hear from Pacific Gas and Electric that they are going to shut Diablo Canyon. Now, there will be other decisions on the state level coming up. And this is a rare case where we have leverage over a nuclear plant at the state level, because in addition to these leases, without which they can't operate Diablo, we have a potential requirement that they build cooling towers. The problem at Diablo is that the owners are in violation of both the state and the federal water quality laws, because the water they're pouring into the Pacific Ocean is way hotter than is allowed under the law. And, you know, here we are being told that the nuclear plants are helping us fight global warming, and yet they're pouring gigantic quantities of radioactive hot water into the ocean. I just want to tell you that on the golden rule here, we're being passed by what I think is a PT vote. Is that a PT vote? The kind John Kennedy was on? It looks like a fast little cruiser that I saw in PT 103, I think it was, in the movie about JFK as a war hero. We're coming about now. There's some serious waste. Because if I go flying into the river, we'll try and, well, I might be back next week, or maybe not. I don't know. All right, we just got through it. So at Diablo, the Coastal Commission and the Water Quality Board and other state agencies may be involved in forcing Diablo Canyon to build cooling towers. And those cooling towers could cost anywhere between $2 and $14 billion. And if that's the case, PG&E will try to pass those costs on to the public. But they'll have to get approval of the Public Utilities Commission of California. And that will be exciting. Be a lot of fun to go up against PG&E and Diablo Canyon on issues of $2 to $14 billion coming out of the ratepayers' pocket to fund cooling towers to keep those ridiculous reactors continuing to operate. Now, here in the Columbia, which Mimi has been talking to you about, we know that the reactor is losing money. And what's happening all over the country is commercial reactors, even though they've been amortized, are losing tons of money because they can't compete with renewable energy. Now, also, fracked gas is part of that equation, but meeting yesterday with an expert on the economics of the Columbia Generating Station, says they're losing hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's becoming the case at nuclear reactors all over the country. The four that shut last week, or the shutdowns were announced, the Quad Cities, two of them, Clinton, those three are in Illinois, and then Three Mile Island 1, all shut because the owners realize that they're losing too much money. We can lose these reactors now up here, the three left on the coast, the two at Diablo Canyon and the one at Columbia Generating Station, if they're forced to do simple economics and actually pay for themselves. What a concept. Never applied, really, to nuclear power, but, you know, that's the situation we're in here. Now, at Columbia Generating Station, the principal owners are municipal utilities in the Northwest. And finally, thanks to Mimi and other activists, the city of Seattle has voted to, Mimi, what would you say, they get out?
They'd like to say definitively get out. The idea is that they get out.
they're being a little bit soft in the message, but the message is we're ready for you to go away.
Okay. One of the reasons I'm talking weird, by the way, I'm getting a little feedback because my voice is delayed, so I'm talking in sort of choppy. What's that? Oh, so we got to move. I'm taking the Moving Mesa up. Should we go in the front of the boat?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going. We're being thrown into the front of the boat by the good crew here. We're going to raise the mainsail and show our colors, the Veterans for Peace sign, and the semaphore developed during the nuclear disarmament movement in the 1950s. So, like Leonardo DiCaprio and who was the actress in the Titanic, I am the king of the world. What, remember that?
I never saw it.
Kate Winslet. You're Kate Winslet. I'm Leonardo. Okay. Oh, she never saw the movie. She's the only person in the United States never to see Titanic. So we're in the bow of the boat here. The rain is letting up a little bit, thankfully. We're going underneath this bridge here in Portland. And up it goes. There it is. The Veterans for Peace sign and the dove. And what's the Santa? Veterans for Peace. Fantastic. Now, a lot of the guys, the crew is four or five on the Golden Rule here, and they're mostly veterans, people who are in Vietnam, even Korea, and who just got sick of war and didn't want it anymore. And I tell you, I'm reading a great autobiography by a Quaker from San Francisco named David Hartsoe, H-A-R-T-S-O-U-G-H. And I just read this passage. He was in a canoe during the Vietnam War, and they were blockading a ship called the Nitro. The Nitro was filled with weapons bound for Vietnam. And they sat there for days and days and days, all these Quakers, meaning to block the Nitro from going to Vietnam with all this weaponry. And Davidson mostly was sheer boredom. They didn't know when the ship was going to leave. They had to sit there for hours and hours a day in these canoes waiting for something to happen. Finally, something did happen. And the ship started to fire up and to begin to pull out of harbor and head to Vietnam. And as it did, seven crew members jumped off the ship and swam to the Quakers and asked for asylum, refusing to sail with the weapons. Can you imagine that? God, what a story. And, you know, it does happen through histories. I just saw a movie called The Man Who Saved the World. Mimi, do you know about The Man Who Saved the World? No. Well, you do. So you didn't see Titanic.
No.
But you did see The Man Who Saved the World. Some people have different tastes in movies. So, do you want to tell us about The Man Who Saved the World? She does not. What happened was, in the 80s, around the time the Challenger blew up, there was a missile station in the Soviet Union. And this missile station, which was had buttons there that were capable of destroying the world, of launching a counterattack or an attack under orders against the United States, they're looking at the computer screen, and suddenly the computer screen tells them that the United States has launched five nuclear-armed missiles against the Soviet Union. And they can see the missiles flying at them. And their strict orders in the Soviet Union were to fire back. They were required by military protocol to launch a counterattack against the United States and essentially end life on Earth. Because if there had been an all-out nuclear war at the time and Ronald Reagan was in the White House and wouldn't hesitate to push a button and had made all these statements about the Soviet Union being the center of all evil in the world and that it would be better for people to die than to grow up under God was communism, for God's sakes. This guy, who's the station chief, do you remember his name? Mimi's giving her
look like I'm an idiot. What's a Russian name? I think it's Alexander Petrov. I'll try that. I'll guess at that. You can Google Man Who Saved the World. He was under orders to launch and to kill hundreds of millions of people, but he didn't. He defied protocol, and he said, I am not going to launch until we have visual confirmation that these missiles are flying. And he waited for the radar of where the missiles were allegedly flying to confirm their existence, right? Kate Winslet, yes. That's what the missiles were named. There was Kate, there was Winslet, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Marlon Brando. So, at any rate, he did not launch. And when they should have become visible, according to the computer screens, they weren't there. And he saved the world. Had he followed orders, had he launched a counterattack against a non-existent attack, we can't even describe what would have happened. He was not honored. I mean, everybody in the bunker, at least according to this, to the movie, The Man Who Saved the World, which was funded by Kevin Costner, by the way, everybody in the bunker breathed a sigh of relief. And then this guy was called down and lambasted by his superiors for violating some kind of protocol. Had nothing to do with the missile attack. He left the military, had a very, very hard life, but eventually was... Are we doing all right on the ship here? We're okay. We're getting rained on. You think the captain could do something about the rain? You're working on it. Okay.
Rain, Harvey.
So yes, Mimi's from Portland. She likes the rain. So
we need it
in Southern California. So at any rate, Kevin Costner eventually found this guy somehow living in Moscow, and they made this amazing documentary called "The Man Who Saved the World." So being here on the Golden Rule, we're sailing the Willamette River against nuclear weapons, against nuclear power plants, against the ships of war. We want to honor this guy who saved the world for us. So we have just a few minutes left now. We are sailing back up. We've turned around. Why is that fire?
It's not. What it is it's part of the war games that they do here to entice kids into joining war because war is fun. So what they do is they come down here with the big ships and the fire ships, and they send off fountains from the ships of colored water because it's so pretty, and war is pretty. And this is part of the PR of the propaganda of Portland and its love of war.
So we're working as a fire boat, and it looks like a giant scorpion shooting off all this water in the river.
Right.
We're headed back to where the cops boarded the ship. You know, what's happened now, those of us from the 60s, we're now older than the cops. And they look at us and they see their grandparents, and they don't want to bust us. So... At any rate, the rain has not let up, and we're going up with the Golden Rule. So this, I don't know how this gets any better, any more moving. Crew in New York, thank you for all the nightmares of the technicalities of getting this show done. But this has been the very first radio broadcast from the Golden Rule, which was launched in 1958. So we're damn near 60 years into the boat.
Michael. Were you on this boat a long time ago?
Yeah, I went to San Diego on the first main voyage and back to Humboldt County. And now I'm going all the way with this summer. And I'm proud of it.
Well, Don, you could be. This guy has a beautiful white beard. He's wearing sunglasses. Oh, my God, we're being passed by the PT boat. Hey, guys, don't shoot. Good to see you guys. Well, they're waving at us anyway. I'm pretty sure that's the same boat. Okay. Here comes a rake. If we lose you guys, we're underwater. We'll be all right eventually. But we're turning into the wake now. And we are avoiding. Oh, my God. This is fun. Oh, wait. I hope you can hear the waves in New York. Okay, we survived it. They were not hostile. They just kind of sailed by us real quick. So listen, I think we're close to the end here. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Hour. Mimi Gurman, activist here in Northern Cal, in Northern Oregon, in Portland. Tell us how to reach you and the group that's fighting the Columbia Generating Station.
You can reach me at info@radcast.org, and you can go to radcast.org and let your friends in Washington or Idaho or friends in Oregon know that they can download those initiatives and get those initiatives I-855 over to Washington for signature so that we can really just, you know, shut this nuke plant down. And for folks in California listening, I just want you to know that we are in complete solidarity with you, with shutting down Diablo Canyon. Our hearts are with you. Our work is with you. And power to you, and power to the sun, and power to the earth, and no nukes. Here's Harvey.
So, California people, it's the Mothers for Peace, definitely Obispo County Mothers for Peace. In New York, we're getting closer to shutting Indian Point. And all the other reactors there, we are on the cusp of a solartopian transition here. Solar power is just booming ahead, even in cloudy, rainy Portland, Oregon. All the nuclear plants in the United States are starting to lose money. Four shut last week, and hopefully we can take them down peacefully, quietly, without explosions like have happened in Fukushima, As we head on out of the show, I'm going to describe to you the scene. We are standing in the bow of the Golden Rule, a dream I've had for years, and I want to reach out to Bonnie Raitt in honor of her father, John Raitt, the great singer, who was at the launch of the Golden Rule in 1958. Bonnie, this is for you and your dad, your wonderful family, and your amazing music and all the work that you and your fellow Quakers have done for peace over the centuries. So we're looking at two... Oh, I see. Okay, so they're pouring water. There's a kayaktivist in the boat, in the water. He's trying to block the PT boat, and they're pouring water on him. Is that right, Amy?
Pouring water on them, but they're blocking the kayak. They're blocking the kayak from moving more towards the center of the Willamette to get more in touch with that boat. And, just great, great thanks to that kayaktivist in the water. Thank you.
So there's this little kayak in the water. Yeah? There's a little kayak in the water, and he's being surrounded. He's being roped off by, cordoned off by other ships.
Yep.
Oh, it's an amazing sight. He's in a little yellow kayak. Pete's going to say goodbye to us. Thank you, everybody, for your New Yorkers. Thank you so much. What an amazing show. First ever broadcast from the Golden Rule. We'll be talking to you next week. I doubt we'll be on a river, but if we're lucky, we'll be back.